This podcast is sponsored by PAX. Whether on water, on land, or in the air, PAX bags are both versatile and flexible backpacks that are perfectly suitable for your requirements in the most demanding of environments. PAX bags are highly regarded due to their exceptional performance in pre-hospital and in critical care environments. Renowned for their durability, they endure harsh conditions while providing rapid and reliable access to essential kit. So their well-organized compartments and customizable configurations enhance efficiency in high-stress situations. PAX bags are designed with infection control in mind and are easy to clean and disinfect. The highly visible colors and reflective strips add quick identification and adherence to quality standards, assuring reliability. The versatility of PAX bags caters to a diverse EMS providers, but also delivers vital equipment and durability and ease of use for pre-hospital critical care services globally. I've used PAX bags in a number of critical care situations and they're absolutely excellent. Please see the show notes for further details.
You're listening to the Pre-Hospital Care Podcast on the Medics Academy Network.
Welcome back to the Pre-Hospital Care Podcast with me, Owen Walker. In this episode, we're going to be examining the future of pre-hospital maternity care with Dawn Kerslake, Stephanie Hayes and Camilla Main. What we wanted to do really in the podcast is delve into the future of pre-hospital maternity care with three consultant midwives from UK NHS Ambulance Services. So we wanted to examine their valuable insights into this critical area of pre-hospital care. So we're going to explore within the episode the training and education of paramedics in maternal care. We're going to also look at the current governance systems and future governance systems of maternal care. We also look at patient follow-up and some of the support mechanisms in place. We're also going to touch on some of the patient-centric initiatives that are in place. So to do this, I have Dawn, Stephanie, and Camilla with us. Welcome all three to the podcast.
Thanks, Owen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dawn, I wondered if you could just maybe go first and just unpack a little bit about yourself and indeed your background.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Dawn Kerslake. I'm going to declare my age. I've worked for the NHS now for 32 years. My career began as a nurse and an accident and emergency nurse, and then I made the switch over to midwifery. And I've been doing that for 20-something years. My maths isn't that great, so don't judge me, but I can't work it out right now.
and yourself, Stephanie?
Oh, thanks, Owen. So I'm Stephanie Hayes. I currently work for the Northwest Ambulance Service. Background-wise, very similar to Dawn, actually. I started off as an ED nurse in the medical assessment unit at the Royal Blackburn Hospital over in East Lancs. Then made the switch over, just like Dawn, to the midwifery course, which is kind of a shortened course for registered nurses. Worked as lead midwife for the triage service over at East Lancs. I then took time off to do a full-time PhD, which was focused on birth trauma. Then done some other roles in university settings. So I was a lecturer and a researcher at the University of Manchester, then did some lecturing work in nursing over at UCLan. Really missed clinical practice. So I went back into the local maternity systems as the governance and training lead for Lancs and South Cumbria. And then got the role for consultant midwife with the Northwest Ambulance Service. So yeah, quite a varied trajectory into the pre-hospital world, but yes, a little bit about me, Owen.
That's fantastic, and like you said, like you both said, actually, that portfolio career actually informs the current role you're doing now. So it's actually prudent and really good to have that mix. And Camilla, to yourself.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm Camilla Main. I'm currently consultant midwife for East Midlands Ambulance Service. So I do 2 days a week for them and 3 days a week for London Ambulance Service. Prior to joining the ambulance service, I worked mainly at Guy's St Thomas's, which is the hospital that's opposite Big Ben in the centre of London, and did various roles there. I left a few times, so I went to work in New Zealand for a bit, and then I came back to St Thomas's and went to work in Tanzania and Haiti for a bit, and the Netherlands as well at one point earlier on. So but kept coming back to St Thomas's and then finally moved to the ambulance service about 2.5 years ago. So I got into pre-hospital care in New Zealand, actually. Love it.
Fantastic, fantastic, fantastic. So Dawn, I just wondered if we could kick off with yourself first, and just if you could just unpack for listeners your role as a consultant midwife and indeed what it entails, but also just the chance to affect change on a regional level, if you could just sort of unpack that for listeners.
Sure. So I was really fortunate when I joined South East Coast Ambulance Service. Our medical director asked me quite quickly to, she gave me a list of things that I had to do immediately. Some were things like look at the maternity pack and make sure it was NASMED compliant, get everybody carrying syntometrin again, a uterotonic. And then she asked me to work closely with some of our senior clinicians. We call them CCPs, critical care paramedics. I know that's not always the acronym that's used across all services. So I think it's fair to say when I joined, I thought I had the answers. And I thought that I was going to be able to come in and be able to develop a really good educational package. And it wasn't until I started to sit down and listen to my pre-hospital colleagues and what they faced and the complexities of what they were having to do every day that I thought, actually, I don't know anything. And so I was really honest. I was really upfront from the get-go and said, actually, I'm gobsmacked by some of the things you've just told me. In a hospital, my colleagues would die on the spot if they had to manage some of the things that you're just telling me about. So I think collectively, I was really fortunate. They kind of took me under their wing and we came up with some guidance that worked in the pre-hospital environment. So we tried to sort of fit what I knew of hospital-based care into a pre-hospital environment and come up with some really good algorithms and some really good ways of managing some really challenging situations. So I've learned loads. I've been in nearly 5.5 years now and I have learned so much, so much. And I think I feel like a real advocate now of pre-hospital clinicians, and I get really crossed. In fact, we all do, all three of us. We ring and rant to one another. We get really affected by some of our acute care colleagues not understanding the pre-hospital context and role. So yeah, we regularly rant to one another. I've probably gone way off the question you just asked me, Owen.
No,
is that what you asked me?
No, yeah, indeed it was. Indeed it was. Indeed it was.
Go on.
Yeah, no,
all of us tried to affect JL Calc and pathways to or influence it. And I think now Camilla's she's understating how fantastic she is. She's actually the lead for the maternity network that we've got across the whole of the UK. And we're trying desperately to influence JL Calc in terms of assisting with rewriting guidance and not just keeping it to the three of us, but sharing it out across all of the ambulance services with all of the leads. And then Steph and I both work with pathways in our individual services. So again, we speak to our control room colleagues, and if they have any challenges on a month by month basis, we can meet with pathways and try and bottom them out as well.
Fantastic. And I think we'll get to that guideline piece, actually, because I think it really is essential from a collective perspective to be able to steer the guidelines going forward. But Steph, on the first question, was that your experience? Because Dawn's just spoken to, and I can attest to, an ambulance service is actually quite a complex beast. Getting to understand the mechanisms, the systems, the processes, the people. Yeah. How did you find it when you first came in?
No, absolutely. And very much like Dawn, coming into the service, I had my kind of preconceptions of what I understood the ambulance service to be. And actually immersing myself in that kind of pre-hospital world, I had a lot to learn, and I was really, really kind of lucky that I had Dawn, who had been in role for about 2 years, wasn't it, Dawn, prior to me getting in my role. At that time as well, we also had Amanda Mansfield down in London Ambulance Service. So I was, as I understand, the third consultant midwife to be appointed. So I kind of had that peer support network. But I think, like you say, they're kind of complex kind of organisations, really, and they kind of differ from ambulance service to ambulance service. And I think a lot of that is driven by your kind of geography that you cover. And actually the complexity of a service that delivers care over lots of different ICBs. So what we understand to be the integrated care boards. We have a lot of different trusts operating in different ways within that kind of geography as well. So although I could kind of lean on Dawn and Amanda for lots of guidance, I think you really do have to carve out your own path within your own ambulance service, aligned to the needs of kind of your geographer and your staff and service. I think just kind of what Dawn said as well, being a consultant practitioner within in any service, it kind of aligned to those five key pillars. And whilst our roles may differ aligned to our own ambulance service, actually kind of that overarching pillars that we kind of have to work towards as consultant practitioners around the clinical practice element, providing that kind of maternity and kind of neonatal leadership, management elements, and that education and research, I would say kind of aligns over all our roles in effect. Yeah.
Oh, indeed. And as you mentioned it there, it's almost project management, really. You're managing portfolios of care and portfolios of initiative, really. But just to add to the complexity, Camilla, you're across two NHS ambulance trusts, both with their nuances and their own structures. How did you find it?
Yeah, I mean, I learned something probably every hour of every day working in the ambulance service. And working across two regions, you see that there are similarities, as has been alluded to, but there's also differences in what is needed in the different regions. I think I kind of see my role as helping the clinicians and the system to do the right thing by the women and families that need us. So whether that's having the right guidance, the right equipment, the right training, or the right system, helping them to do the right thing. But also I think there's a very much external facing element in both the regions that I work in. And I know it's the same for Dawn and Steph and others, that you're really trying to get the system to see you as a system partner in providing maternity and neonatal care. So we know that ambulance services are the second biggest provider of maternity and newborn care, but that's not really always recognized within the wider system. And so our job is really to put ourselves out there as a system partner, and that external facing element of the consultant role is really, really crucial.
So we were just speaking offline actually before we started about some of the sort of revelations, and I was very much privy to that when I had a revelation of just how difficult critical care in maternal cases can be and how fundamentally challenging it is. But my question really to Dawn initially, just what are some of the current challenges that face maternal care within the pre-hospital environment?
Yeah, so I think somebody said this to me the other day and it really resonated. We're the service that can't say no. So some of our acute care colleagues can sit in their lovely hospital that's all warm and cozy, and we can tell them about a woman out in the community that's doing X, Y, or Z, and they can say, oh no, we're not going to that because she's under 37 weeks and she's not been risk assessed. So, you know, here's a challenge. That person has got a 3-year midwifery degree, you know, bucket loads of experience, presumably. And we're sending out the person that might have only had half a day's training. I mean, it just makes no sense, does it? It still ceases to amaze me. So I think there's a complete lack of understanding from our acute care colleagues. And I don't wish to, you know, speak ill of them, but I don't think it's their fault. I think I didn't have that understanding 6 years ago either. It's just circumstantial. But things like we hear all the time, and it makes our blood boil, and I think I might make you fall off your chair, Owen, scoop and run. You know, don't say that to me. Don't say those words to me. You know, long run times, they make it really challenging, don't they? People might not have considered that there's an hour to get to hospital. And that's before we've even extricated from the 16th floor of wherever we may be. On scene times, the amount of times I get acute care colleagues saying, oh, well, you know, why did it take them an hour to get here? It's like, well, there was a dog jumping at the ankles. You know, they had to lock up. They had to do X, Y, and Z. So there's some of the challenges I can think of the top of my head. Geography is always going to be an enormous challenge depending on where you are. I mean, Camilla will talk of that because in London, she doesn't have geography so much as a challenge. But I'm sure she's facing that in EMAS, and certainly Steph and I do. And then finally, I think just going back to my first point, that lack of robust training. How is it that in some services, colleagues will get half a day in their entire career? In other services, you know, they might be an experienced clinician that gets one of our time every 6 weeks in their governance training. it's really hit and miss. And if there's one thing I could standardize tomorrow, and I am leaving on the risk register at CCAM, is that staff are still expected to come in their own time to training. It's just absurd. It wouldn't happen in the acute care setting.
And to Camilla and to Steph, does that resonate with you across your services? Just is that sort of maybe lack of standardization, but also that what you're hearing from the staff is in their lack of feeling of preparedness for some of these cases? Does that come through to you both?
Oh, definitely. I would kind of make reference as well if people haven't had chance to kind of read it, but we did and we published a survey that we did in the North West Ambulance Service exploring staff's confidence and competence in attending newborn and maternity emergencies in the pre-hospital setting. And actually, we had around 500 responses, all with very similar themes about that kind of preparedness, lack of training, education, kind of really struggling with being able to access any kind of training, education, expected to do it in their own time. So I would say absolutely that kind of echoes true, that lack of standardization. And I just kind of defer this to Camilla, because Camilla is doing some great work at kind of the National Maternity Ambulance Leads Group about how we're trying to standardise that. And I think it'd be good to kind of bring it in here. Cam, if you was happy to do so.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I guess, you know, my feeling is that, well, not my feeling, we know between us, is that any obstetric emergency that can happen in the safety of a labour ward can happen in the pre-hospital setting. So I think we often, when people think about pre-hospital maternity care, they think about transfers between, like, intra-facility transfers or planned home births that then need to be transferred into hospital. Actually, for me, they're my least worrying ones. What we're talking about here is unplanned maternity and newborn care, and often emergencies. And there's not a big red button on the wall that we can pull and 20 people will run in within the next 10 seconds, which is what happens on a labour ward. But the same emergency can happen, you know, as Dawn said, 16 floors up with no lift, with a dog biting at your ankles. And we're sending these people in, and we're then expecting, and rightly so, that family is expecting to have life-saving treatment at that point of contact. And so as a system, are we prepared enough for that? Are we preparing clinicians enough for that? No, I don't think we are. And that's why we've kind of built up the leads group, which I think we're going to talk a bit more about later on the podcast. But just to try and reduce some of that variance and make people more prepared if we can.
Indeed, absolutely. And I think that systematic approach, like you were saying, but that preparedness across domains and across presentations is absolutely key. But to my next question, really, and Steph, I'll ask it to you first, if that's okay. And it's really, my revelation really was that actually, when the first midwives were employed within an ambulance trust, you kind of sat back and thought, gosh, why is this taken so long to get to this place? Because this is absolutely essential. But could you maybe speak to just the importance of employing midwives? But I think this is also for the international listenership, because we're talking about a UK-centric model here, but I'm mindful of Australia, of America, of Canada, of Europe. Could you maybe speak to why it's important to employ midwives within ambulance services, not only just for training and education, but also governance and decision-making?
Thanks, Owen. No, it's a great question. And when I kind of thought about this question, it was about kind of thinking about my experience in the acute kind of setting. In any other kind of, you know, healthcare setting, we think about the multidisciplinary team and how important that is to kind of really drive forward that patient-centered care. And I think with the ambulance service, something that I found coming into the ambulance service is it's very heavily driven by the paramedic profession, which absolutely, non-surprising. However, I do feel with kind of the way kind of care is being delivered differently, you know, how we're changing as a landscape in healthcare and the complexities of the patient groups that we attend to in the pre-hospital setting, actually, you know, moving towards that multidisciplinary model with the subject matter experts experts within the pre-hospital setting is vital. And that's kind of the way I'd envisage the ambulance service to look moving forward around these specialist roles such as consultant midwives. And how I see that linking into the importance of kind of the governance structures is when we think about doing things such as incident reviews and we look at the kind of clinical care delivery, actually you need that subject matter expertise to look at, was that guidance that that paramedic had to kind of manage that particular case? Was it fit for practice? Was it fit for kind of the pre-hospital context? And actually having that subject matter expertise to look at incident reviews is so vital if we're going to kind of strengthen how we review and, you know, take that learning from incidences to kind of better make the guidance for paramedics more true to the context of the environment, really.
So looking at governance structures, and also just so the importance of governance really and how that's evolving over time. Camilla, could I get you to speak to some of the elements of governance that you'd like to see indeed standardized in 2024, maybe throughout the UK and certainly indeed throughout the two regions you're involved with?
Yeah, so I think, no surprises that there's a lot of variance in terms of governance across the country and across the four nations, you know, Wales, Scotland, Northern Ireland and England. So I think amongst ambulance services, they can at the moment, there's not actually any standardisation in terms of what they have to look into with regards to maternity and newborn care. There are some elements that they need to feed into certain investigations. So, for example, MNSI, that used to be HSIB, so Maternity and Neonatal Safety Investigations, they're an external body that look into certain categories of maternity and newborn events, such as a neonatal death up to 7 days, a baby that requires cooling for a hypoxic brain injury or suspected one, a maternal death, or a baby that dies during labour. So they will look into those investigations, and if the ambulance service is involved, then they will request certain information from the ambulance service. So that's they are mandated to do that. I think definitely there's some work to do with MNSI, and we've done a lot in the regions that I work in to try and strengthen that relationship. And I know that Dawn and Steph have as well, just to make sure that those reports that they are writing for the families are really fit for purpose, but also that the pre-hospital setting learns as well as the acute setting about what we can do better. Then there's Embrace. So that's for people that are not aware, it's Mothers and Babies Reducing Risk Through Audit and Confidential Inquiries. So that stands for Embrace. And Steph and I have actually just become pre-hospital assessors for the first time. So they look into maternal deaths and other things, but the element that we're involved in is maternal deaths. And for the first time, when a maternal death happens now, if the ambulance service is involved, that element of care will get assessed and looked at. And we're really excited about this because it means that in years to come, we will be better equipped to prevent these maternal deaths happening from a pre-hospital perspective. But again, it's we're at the beginning of that journey, and we'd love to see that more established within what ambulance services are looking to do. PMRT is another one that I'll just mention lastly, and that's the perinatal mortality review tool, which is well established within acute maternity settings. But again, the ambulance service has varying involvement in that, and it's really down to the acute providers as to whether they want to involve the ambulance service. And we feel that that's a missed opportunity because definitely there's things for us to learn in the ambulance service, but also we hold very interesting insights sometimes into these women and families. What we know is that the most vulnerable women in society that are already at risk of health inequalities are most likely to be requiring the ambulance service during and following pregnancy. And so actually by involving us in those reviews, we're going to get a more holistic assessment of how we can prevent poor outcomes for the most vulnerable women and families. I think we'd love to see the ambulance service again as a system partner in those governance structures that exist within maternity and neonatal care. But please feel free to jump in, my other colleagues, or disagree with me if you disagree.
No, indeed. And Dawn, is that the case in CCAM? Are you looking to really systematize and standardize governance to align to a national standard, but also sort of set that level of expectation amongst paramedic and hospital colleagues that this is what to expect when you join an ambulance service?
Yeah, absolutely. We're desperately trying to align in the same way that the acute care colleagues manage their governance. It's really difficult. I'm not going to lie. I think we all face that challenge every day. And sometimes we perhaps don't feel very heard about it. But as Cam alluded to, you know, PSURF is coming and that will hopefully make us all sing from the same hymn sheet.
So what we were just talking about there actually beforehand was just around training and education and around just the, because I think just as Camilla was talking there, there is this symbiotic kind of relationship between wanting gold standard or indeed just safe standards of practice for the patient population, but also this symbiotic training and education, standardization of training and education for the staff, because this can lead to PTSD. We're having such a some horrendous cases to deal with and certainly not feeling equipped to deal with them can actually have that converse effect on staff. And maybe to yourself, Dawn, and indeed yourself, Steph, could you speak to standardization of training and what you hope to achieve and how you hope to achieve that?
Yeah, so this is difficult because we all do things very differently across all different ambulance services. So it would be great if we could standardize that, but that's not going to happen despite our best influence. So what we've done as a national leads group is we've talked about how we can affect JR Calc and we've talked about how we can make it more user friendly because at the moment it feels a bit clunky. It's not very intuitive. We want people to be able to click on the tiles and it will say hemorrhage, you know, postpartum hemorrhage. The next tile says breech birth. The next tile says normal vaginal birth, you know, so that people can have a very quick at a glance. And we talked as well about making some silent videos. Now, bear with me on this one. Silent videos are such that this might be that you've practiced helping a woman to birth a breech on a mannequin in a classroom. But when you're faced with it in reality and your bandwidth has gone, you might just forget everything that you've learned. So we need to put things in place that assist our colleagues. And we thought it might be useful to have silent videos on JR Calc that they could have a very quick, you know, pop to the corner of the room. The reason they're silent is so nobody knows they're doing it, obviously. And they have a very quick look at a video that tells them where they're going to place their hands and how they're going to try and manage that emergency situation. So this year, that's definitely something we want to look to achieve. It's actually on my to-do list, so I'm not going to look at Steph or Camilla as I say this because their eyes are going to bore into me and say, "Why haven't you done it yet?" But it is only February, guys, okay? It is only February. I've still got another 10 months to complete my challenge. But you're right, these are high acuity, low occurrence jobs. And as a result, you know, the stakes are high and they have a lasting impact on our colleagues. And I can think of, and I know that Cam and Steph are the same, I can think of colleagues that have been to these jobs and it's been career ending for them. And none of us want that. We want people to feel supported. We want people to know that there are things they can do. So, for instance, in my service, Channel 16 on the radio gets you straight through to the critical care desk. And you've got a critical care paramedic there that will talk you through an algorithm. And we acid tested our algorithms on lay people. We sat them in a room with a mannequin and a radio and we filmed them and we went into another classroom and we told them they were only allowed to perform what we suggested on the radio. And then we watched back what they did, which was actually quite funny because what we thought they were doing and what they were actually doing were two very different things. But it helped us to inform how we would speak to a crew because you're blind, aren't you, doing telephone triage? So yeah, it's something that we're all very passionate about. It's the one thing that we all try really, really hard to get right. And I don't think anybody's got the golden recipe, but collectively, hopefully we'll come up with something that will be user-friendly by the end of 2024 on JR Calc.
And to yourself, Steph, are you taking the same approach within NWAS?
Yeah, I think as part of the National Leads Group, we all contribute to the review of JR Calc, but from kind of a more kind of service-led model of training and education. So for example, in NWAS, we support the mandatory training team with their development of their resources when they're covering maternity on the mandatory training cycles, We've managed to influence the induction team now, so anybody who's inducted into the Northwest Ambulance Service will have a week long of maternity, which is fantastic. We also purchased the pre-hospital prompt package, which is a national package aimed at management of obstetric emergencies in the pre-hospital setting. Certain services have developed their own packages. There's also a lot of kind of similarities with what we do in NWAS of CCAM and LAS of doing joint training with the maternity, community maternity midwifery teams, for example, so doing joint training days, which is great. But I think it goes back to that kind of pertinent point that actually it's not standardized. And actually, when staff do attend, they are expected to attend in their own time, which is not ideal, really. But we're all doing kind of lots of similarity and kind of similar things. And I would say kind of from a national perspective in the UK, there's a real buzz around doing the kind of the joint MDT training days now with maternity services. And just for context on that, because I think it might be kind of interesting for listeners, because they might be kind of hearing something around this in their own areas, but midwifery teams are really keen, and community midwifery teams especially, who might be the teams who call for an ambulance service for a transfer into the obstetric unit, are really keen to work with their paramedic colleagues and ambulance services around doing that joint sim. So it might be that kind of, you know, anybody who's listening has been invited on to kind of part of that, but we think they're really worthwhile. And I know in London, you've kind of formalized that a little bit more, haven't you, Cam? You've standardized it a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we've just got a training package that we can offer to the maternity unit, and we actually invite them to the ambulance station so that we can kind of control the scenarios that they're put into and make sure they're pre-hospital focus based on JR Calc. And yeah, we've had really amazing feedback. We get them to look at each other's kit. And just to kind of highlight the perspective of the pre-hospital clinician. Yeah.
That's fantastic. And as Steph was saying, that MDT, that multidisciplinary team approach, because, you know, they say sort of train hard, fight easy, but train together, because that's in reality, that's what it's going to be like when you are handing that there's that transition of care. So it's prudent to sort of bring that fidelity forward. Steph, could I get you to speak to, so Dawn mentioned, and very quite rightly so, just how emotive these cases can be and how career ending they can be if not handled appropriately. But could you speak to sort of follow-up and indeed sort of patient follow-up from a maternal perspective and indeed a pediatric and or neonatal perspective for clinicians?
Yeah, absolutely. And as you say, these cases are really, really emotive. And actually, the need for that kind of really structured and formalized debrief is absolutely paramount. But as we know, in reality, that's not kind of standardized. And I think it's a real gap that we have, not only in the pre-hospital setting, I would kind of say, I think even in maternity services, healthcare services, kind of as a collective, actually, we are not very good at doing that kind of formalized debrief, that cold debrief, that kind of hot debrief. And how we were supporting staff when they are involved in a really emotive case. So I think there's lots of work to be done in that space, I would say. I would kind of note that actually we've got quite a good model in NWAS, which is the TRIM model. I don't know if you've heard of that, Owen. It's the Trauma Risk Incident Management System. So one of our consultant paramedics for education actually was part of the development of the TRIM, which really does support. I think there's still kind of gaps with anything, because I think you have to kind of unpick that, you know, actively seeking out the TRIM or being okay to kind of speak up and ask if it's your direct line management around getting that kind of level of support. But I do know as well that we have kind of, you know, national support services in the pre-hospital ambulance service that staff can kind of tap into should they wish for some kind of focus level of counselling. But I would say, yes, you know, there's a gap, I would say, something we need to focus on. I don't know if kind of Dawn, you got anything to add on that kind of emotive element of that kind of pre-hospital maternity care?
No, only that it's really important to be available, and I try to be available whenever I can to do that immediate debrief if the crew need it, and then try and speak to their line managers and get them stood down, because we're not always that compassionate. I think we get so, you know, as in my colleagues within the ambulance service, that, you know, they've got to get enough ambulances out on the road, and therefore standing somebody down is quite a big deal, but we've got to care for people because we know that if we care for people, they perform better and they don't go off sick for weeks on end. So we've got to get better at it. And it's about being available and it's about being approachable. It's all those things that make you a good leader, isn't it? In terms of staff being able to pick up the phone to you or send you an email and say, actually, I found this really difficult and I'm really struggling. That would be my take on it.
Camilla, could I just get you to speak to just how you've been challenged and maybe you're overcoming challenges into 2024 with the adoption and employment of midwives within ambulance services. And I guess as an adjoiner to sort of adopting and employing midwives within ambulance services, how maybe you're also training up paramedics within the ambulance service to sort of take on that kind of that those midwifery roles as well.
Yeah, so obviously, because we're here, we really see the value in midwives being employed by the ambulance service. And we would recommend that every ambulance service employs a consultant midwife for the reasons that we've talked about today and the impact that we can hopefully have. We know that essentially it's down to each ambulance service to also see the value in that, and I would say to those ambulance services that we do say to those ambulance services through NASMED, through the National Ambulance Medical Directors Group, that actually it's an investment to have midwives helping you to provide safer care in the pre-hospital setting and helping you to be a system partner, etc., all the things we've talked about. It's an investment for, you know, even one baby, it will be an investment for. And we know that the reach is much broader than that. What some ambulance services have done is rather than employ a midwife, have got a paramedic or a pre-hospital clinician with an interest in maternity and neonatal care and maybe some further like postgraduate training. And they have used them as kind of a link into the National Leads Group. There was a prevention of future deaths notice that was served by a coroner following a very challenging pre-hospital case, which said that they would recommend that consultant midwives are employed in every ambulance service. And that went to the Association of Chief Executives for Ambulance Services. However, that group cannot mandate it to the ambulance services, which is what we've been told as co-chairs of the National Leads Group. And actually, it is then down to the ambulance services to make that call. Something that some people have considered, and we've been recently having discussions about this, is where you've got LMNS, so a local maternity and neonatal system, which feeds into the ICB, the Integrated Care Board. The LMNS actually needs to see the value in it for their region, having a midwife potentially, you know, on a year contract to assess the need. And I think this is how Steph actually came into post, to assess the need. And then actually that develops into showing that a consultant midwife is needed. So I think they're the kind of things that we would want to be highlighting to the system going forward.
My next question really is to Dawn, but it's kind of similar to that question really, and it really is about, and it's essentially it's what we're doing now, which is collaborating and colluding together around sort of sharing of information. Because I think to Dawn, what I was going to really ask was sort of the mutual benefit to ambulance services from employing midwives, and it is about being able to sit on these boards together, share information and share insights. Would that be your thoughts as well?
Yeah, I think you say it really well. So I think that we are really fortunate in the roles that we have, that we are the voice of both. So we've all worked in a hospital setting. We know how a hospital works in terms of midwifery practice, but now we've stepped over into the pre-hospital practice, we see that too. So I definitely think we're the voice of both, and we kind of have that glimpse into both worlds, which makes it really useful when you end up going to one of those PMRTs or those after action reviews that Camilla alluded to, that you can advocate and you can give that pre-hospital perspective that, you know, as I said previously, it's not their fault they don't know it. But when they say, well, why didn't they just scoop and run? Why did they spend so long on scene? You can explain why that might be. And that's not to be defensive, that's to be pragmatic and factual around it. I also attend, I mean, we're all running those joint training days, as Camilla said, which are really helpful because not only do you get to meet the people that you might then go and work with on a job in a few weeks' time, and you might understand their perspective a little better, but you also get to see each other's kit. And that's really useful because when you're feeling really stressed, the last thing you want is someone to hand you a suction, you know, piece of suction equipment. You don't know how to turn it on. So that's been really helpful. And I also attend the community training days in as many acute trusts as I can. And I go and talk to the midwives about why they feel unsupported by us, or what's their axe to grind with us. And we talk through what categories of calls mean what. And, you know, if somebody turns up in a car, don't be disappointed. It's not an ambulance. That's actually a really senior clinician that's going to be able to help you quite a lot. But, you know, I've certainly had crews say, or critical care paramedics say, midwives have opened front doors and gone, oh, I wanted a truck. And it's like, yeah, no, that's coming too. But in the meantime, hopefully I'll be able to add some value to what's happening here. So yeah, it does work both ways. I think we're a glimpse into both worlds, and I hope that that adds value and benefit to both.
No, indeed, absolutely. Steph, could I get you to speak to some of the patient-centric initiatives this year that you are looking to employ within NWAS and or more nationally?
Yeah, not a problem. I think we're all kind of working on local initiatives within our kind of own ambulance services in regards to kind of those patient-centric initiatives. But more kind of on a national level, there's kind of lots of reviews that have been released over the last couple of years. We've got things such as the Ockenham Review, the three-year plan for maternity and neonatal services. We had the Pregnancy Loss Review that was released last year as well. They all kind of feed into that pre-hospital element of maternity and newborn care. And kind of thanks to the amazing kind of chairship that Camilla has done with Steve McGee from the Welsh Ambulance Service for the Maternity Ambulance kind of National Leads Group, we're formalising that more kind of standardised now, where we're kind of working with the national team, such as the Pregnancy Loss Review team, looking at the focus recommendations that do include the pre-hospital setting. So kind of being able to feed into that and help kind of deliver on those initiatives and those recommendations. So I think there's a lot of work going on nationally. And I think the kind of strength of that as well is to kind of reduce that variation and help that standardisation. So whilst we're doing kind of local initiatives, and I'll defer to kind of Dawn in a second on this, because Dawn, you've done some amazing work, Dawn, on the kind of, you know, the preterm labour pathways within CCAM, and kind of CAM's done a lot with the kind of red flag trigger tools for pre-hospital maternity. So I would kind of note that actually the pre-hospital leads group is kind of a place where we can share those initiatives between each other. So kind of one of my main initiatives in NWAS this year is to kind of steal with pride some of the work that's been done in London Ambulance Service and vice versa. So we can kind of share between services as well, which is really, really nice.
Yeah, Dawn, could you speak to that just for a second, some of the work you've been doing?
Yeah, so it was actually a few years ago, we did what's called a preterm pathway, which is a little bit like taking a patient to a major trauma centre. We know that they potentially have better outcomes. And it's the same with a premature baby. So we would like premature babies to be born in certain hospitals where we've got specialists such as neonatologists rather than a general paediatrician. So we did a pathway which is quite complex, as you can imagine, because there are all sorts of trip hazards, I suppose, in terms of crews just going, oh, well, we'll just drive another 20 minutes to the level three unit. You know, you need to speak to a senior clinician, you need to follow a certain pathway before you can make those sorts of decisions. But yeah, basically, it was a pathway which looked at trying to get babies born in the right unit, in the right place at the right time. So I'm happy to share it with anybody. We like to share amongst ourselves and plagiarize. There's no point in reinventing the wheel. But yeah, that's something we've done, and touch wood, it's worked really well to date. You always cross your fingers and toes, don't you, and hope that actually there isn't an adverse outcome because somebody did take that extra journey. But touch wood, at the minute, all's good.
Oh, that's fantastic. And just before we migrate onto the next question, actually, Steph just raised that, Camilla, you were working on that sort of the red triggers, or indeed the red flags. Could you maybe speak to that and just that initiative and how you've embedded it?
Yeah, so we basically have borrowed the population data from the National work that has been done on maternity early warning scores and created like a flag system on an action tool. We also included various other things from learning from incidents and from national reports and confidential inquiries to come up with this action tool that's available on our JLCalc Plus, so our regional guidelines. And it basically takes into consideration the fact that pregnant and post-birth women have different physiology and therefore need lower thresholds. We've then added on to that the fact that they're in the pre-hospital setting, so we need to be even more cautious because we don't have the diagnostic tools, the training, the resources, the equipment to deal with what that woman or baby might be facing. So we have actually just started an audit into the tool, but the tool has been up and running, this new tool, since January last year, 2023. And it's got various, we've also done a neonatal version of the tool. So there's two mum ones and two baby ones, essentially. We're hoping that we can use some of that work to create a national tool for pregnant and pregnant women and babies everywhere.
So we mentioned NASMED already. So the UK Pre-Hospital Maternity and Newborn Care leads a subgroup that feeds into NASMED, and the boards that you sit on. Could you maybe speak to the priorities? You know, KPIs are always a buzzword in contemporary practice, but could you maybe speak to indeed some of the key performance indicators that you're, or indeed priorities that you're currently pushing forward?
Yeah, so this group is made up of people that come along representing their ambulance service, and we have representation from all the ambulance services across the UK, Northern Ireland, Scotland, Wales and England. And essentially what we're trying to do is, as people have already said, not reinvent the wheel, share learning, share best practice. We have kind of this underlying ethos that if an incident has happened in one place, it could happen anywhere. So let's make it safe for wherever the woman or family is experiencing that. So that's where this kind of shared learning has come from. And we tried to increase the accountability of people attending and increase the accountability of us to NASMED, but also what NASMED can do to support us as a group of people that are trying to improve care in this really niche area of healthcare, which is pre-hospital maternity and newborn care. So the College of Paramedics, the Royal College of Obstetrics and Gynaecology, Royal College of Midwives, they all come along as well. And together we kind of have this partnership to try to standardise, I guess, and work out where standardisation is not appropriate, and then take various work streams forward. So the national flag system, or the pre-hospital early warning score that we are producing at the moment, is one of those work streams. And we also have an equipment subgroup, a subgroup out of the subgroup, which is looking at the various equipment needs and challenges such as newborn restraints and things like that. We also, Dawn and Steph have mentioned about pathways. So obviously there's MPDS, the other dispatch system. So we try and share learning and things that we're feeding up to them so that they're not receiving advice from 13 different ambulance services, that they're receiving advice directly from us who are living and breathing this and reviewing lots of births. And then there's various things that are happening nationally, which we are feeding into then as a group. So, for example, there's work going on to help women who are requesting care outside of guidance receive safe care from us and the maternity providers. We're looking at producing pre-hospital maternity training material. We're looking at things that we can do to help women whose English isn't their first language. So things like Card Medic and things like that. We're also very excitingly holding our first conference on the 3rd of September this year in Birmingham. So the National Leads Group, and although myself and Steve, we chair it and we try to drive it forward, but it's very much a team approach and everyone contributes, and Steph and Dawn are underplaying their contribution to that group as well. So that conference will be hosted by all of us in Birmingham, and we're hoping that it will be one of many future conferences where we can share best practice and really give pre-hospital clinicians something that they won't necessarily get from their own ambulance services, something that they can take back to them and say, this is what we should be doing. And, you know, this is the quality improvement work that's been done elsewhere. And why can't we do it where I work? So, yeah, really excited about that.
Oh, and what we do actually is we'll put in the show notes some of the resources and links to some of these, indeed these institutions, but also if there is any links to the conference, we'll certainly put that in the show notes for people to explore further, because that would be fantastic actually.
Awesome. Thank you.
Just no worries. Just as a pivot slightly, Dawn, looking at pre-hospital maternal research for a second. So we've spoken to some of sort of the KPIs and indeed some of the sort of national reporting that Camilla's just spoken to, but could you maybe speak to sort of some of the research or indeed the priorities in research that you see ongoing at the moment?
I was going to hand that one to Steph because she has a real research background and I think she might do it more justice than I, but also I just thought I might mention, because we may not get another opportunity to talk about the out-of-hospital NLS course that's just recently been developed in the last 12 months. So we're all part of that now, all three of us. All of us within the next few months are going to be instructors within it. Two of us already are. One of us is about to take on that role as well. And I'm not going to allude as to who. But all of us are going to be out-of-hospital NLS instructors. And it's going to be great because we're going to be able to go around the country delivering a bespoke course, which my understanding is this is the first RCUK course that's become an out-of-hospital course. So we're really proud of it. And we're really pleased that we're really pleased that RCUK have recognised the need for a pre-hospital resuscitation course. And I think possibly they, I'm led to believe by some of my consultant paramedic colleagues, they're now looking at an out-of-hospital ALS, et cetera, et cetera. So all credit to RCUK for allowing us to progress with that. It's been a labour of love for the last few years, but it's now out and hopefully people will start seeing that advertised on the RCUK website. There's only about 10 of us at the moment teaching on it, so it's going to be a bit longer until we've grown the faculty, but we're getting there. And then I'll let Steph answer the research question because she will be better placed than I.
No, indeed. Steph, over to you.
Oh, no, thanks, Dawn. So, yeah, pre-hospital maternity and newborn research. I think it's a really exciting time in this space. And actually what we kind of know in the kind of evidence space is there's not much out there. There's not much research been undertaken focused on that kind of pre-hospital maternity element. A lot of the studies that have been undertaken have been undertaken in Australia. There's quite a buzz for maternity research pre-hospital in Australia. So is it Belinda Flanagan does a lot of work over in Australia in this kind of sphere. But actually what we know within that kind of evidence base is it focuses predominantly on birth in the pre-hospital setting. And I know, Camilla, you kind of alluded to, actually, that is only one element of what we deal with in that kind of unscheduled access to care. So I think it's a really exciting time for pre-hospital research in this area. I've just been awarded actually an RFPB NIHR funded study to look at the kind of pre-hospital maternity research. So this will be called the DIAS study. It's disparities in access to the Northwest Ambulance Service and its association with maternal and neonatal outcomes. So for the first time, we're going to be mapping what is the association with calling and requiring an ambulance transfer into hospital with maternal and neonatal outcomes. So that's going to be really kind of pivotal in kind of understanding that kind of association and that risk profile as well. So I would say for anybody listening who's kind of interested in research, is that actually this particular focus and this kind of arena would be, you know, a really interesting topic and a topic area. And actually, via the maternity kind of leads group that CAM chairs on, is something that we want to formalise via that kind of format as well, isn't it, CAM? So have that kind of standard leading agenda item on anybody who's really interested in that kind of pre-hospital research to come and kind of have a chat with us, and we can kind of support anybody wanting to take that forward as well. So there's not much out there, Owen, is what I'd say, which actually in research terms is quite exciting because there's lots to research and lots to look at. So anybody listening who's interested, please do get in touch.
Cam, have you got any ongoing research within either London or indeed in the East Midlands at all?
No, I mean, not as what Steph has outlined, just not enough minutes in the day, really. But I guess something I would just mention is a joint piece of work we're doing with MNSI. We're looking at a national thematic of all maternal deaths that have happened in the last 5 years. And so we're currently just putting that all together. So there's 133 maternal deaths that we're looking at that the ambulance service has had an impact on or provided care to those women. So that's that will hopefully lead to some really interesting insight in that arena. But no, for in my regions, mainly audits, we're trying to get some proper audits established to understand what we're doing and what we're not doing at the moment.
I absolutely and fundamentally agree with that, that baseline data, because to Steph's point, any time you're going to drive a service forward, it has to be data driven, and it has to, you have to have that good knowledge of the baseline data to then understand what the research priorities are actually. But Steph, back to you, because we are going to do a deep dive with one of your colleagues, Susan Rind, into a fantastic initiative that NWAS has adopted and potentially could be a model beyond a national scale, could be even further, but that of the maternity quality and governance practitioner. Could you maybe just initially speak to, we'll do a deep dive and indeed a separate podcast on this role, because I think it's fantastic, but could you maybe just unpack it initially as to what it is and indeed how it's been, how it's come to be?
Yes, not a problem. So yes, I have a wonderful colleague called Susie Rind, who is in that role at the minute within the Northwest Ambulance Service. And how that came about actually is kind of interesting. So I'd applied for one of the NIHR senior research leaders role, which I was successful in obtaining back in April. So this is a 3-year program for myself in terms of buying out my time for 2 days a week in NWAS to build capacity and capability for research in the pre-hospital kind of arena, which kind of links back to the study that we've got the grant funding for. But actually what that afforded me then was this kind of opportunity to have this pot of money, which had bought my time out for, to say, actually, where is the focus within my role that actually I would really benefit from somebody just focusing in on that particular element of kind of, you know, that pre-hospital maternity care. And actually what I'd kind of noted that we needed to strengthen was kind of how we standardize looking at incidences, how we standardize and capture kind of reviews, how we ensure that we are included in things such as the PMRT reviews and the joint reviews for maternal deaths with the care providers. So I'd kind of pitched to my organization that actually, you know, I've kind of brought this money in. Can I utilize it to kind of provide an opportunity for a pre-hospital clinician? And that was kind of close to my heart as well, that actually it was something that could be a developmental opportunity for somebody as well. Rather than getting in kind of, you know, putting out for a consultant midwife to come in for 2 days a week, actually, what can we do to kind of upskill the practitioners that work in the ambulance service? So yeah, that's kind of how the role came about. And actually it's been really fundamental. And although Susie's only been in role for 6 months, it's been an absolute game changer. And I'm really excited for you to kind of meet Susie and kind of go over her experience of kind of, you know, really engaging with the system partners as a paramedic, but having that seat at the table to be able to kind of speak to the pre-hospital setting, but also gain that kind of insight from her learning as well about maternity care and how I've kind of supported her in that role as well. So I think it'll be an interesting podcast, and I won't go too much into depth, but I think it's been really fundamental in how we, you know, kind of include paramedics in that particular pre-hospital maternity arena as well.
Oh, listen, I couldn't agree with you more, actually. And that mentorship and guidance into a formalised role is absolutely fantastic, actually. So if I could just come to Camilla, Dawn and Steph have both actually spoken to the piece around supporting staff on the road, hospital clinicians on the road through difficult maternal incidents. Could I get you to speak to how you've seen that improve over time, those sort of support mechanisms for paramedics and or wider staff in both in London and indeed maybe the Eastern Midlands and or nationally?
Yeah, I think one element to this is that I think is really important is actually having pre-hospital midwives or midwives that work in the ambulance service. Because they can actually provide that kind of subject matter debriefing about a really specific maternity incident, which I think crews really appreciate. When they've been through the kind of this very difficult situation, even if there's a good outcome, it feels really difficult because they're having to do such a specialist thing. And having that opportunity to reach out to a midwife and ask them, so when that happened, why was that happening? Or what could I have done to help that woman understand the situation better? Or and kind of drawing on those subject matter experts, I would say, in inverted commas, to say, to help them to understand the situation more. So something that I've done in London and I am doing at the moment in East Midlands is having maternity newborn care leads who are paramedics. They do it actually on top of their day jobs and across different grades, across different areas. So in London, we've got there's about 19 clinical team managers, one for each group station. And they kind of have their ear to the ground in terms of any crew members that may be feeling distressed following an incident. They help us review incidents. We review pretty much all pre-hospital births and obstetric emergencies through that way. And then they really look at the welfare element as well. And they'll support the crews there and then, and we give them extra training. But also then they can link us in where appropriate. So if the crews do have further questions, because actually often in my experience, them just not understanding what has happened or wanting a bit more of the pathophysiology behind what has happened actually helps them to process those really difficult events more and empowers them that if they went to a similar situation, they would know that element, that extra bit and be able to contribute to that situation. So I think by having midwives available, I think trusts are able to support staff better. But I think, as already has been said, I think we do have much further to go with that. And as a national leads group, these are the kinds of things that we consider to say, you know, how can we support crews better nationally following these really difficult incidents?
So finally, as we come into land on the conversation, if I could just get you all to speak to some of the good news stories that you've seen through 2024. Maybe Steph, if you could initially start us off.
Oh, thanks, Owen. So much to kind of share from a positive kind of news story for the pre-hospital arena. Via the Leeds group, thinking about ahead about the conference that's going to be held, the first conference for pre-hospital maternity newborn care. I know Dawn had mentioned around the kind of launch of the RCUK out of hospital NLS course, which has really kind of taken into account that kind of complexity of environment and that kind of misnead that we had previously. A lot of the kind of joint training work that we've shared nationally. I think from kind of a local level, and I know kind of we're all kind of looking at this differently, but I think having a seat at the table for a formalised kind of board such as ICB has been integral to kind of how we share data into services for consideration. I know Cam's done a lot of work down in London around the kind of ICBs in the London area. We've done a lot in the Northwest around the perinatal board reporting structures. So it all sounds quite strategic, but actually it's really important to have that kind of formalized reporting structure into your integrated care board. So that's kind of a really good kind of sharing of how we formalize that from kind of a feeding into the services.
And Dawn, from your perspective, what good news stories could you speak to?
In 2024, I've got a few things I'd like to achieve. And one of them I'm stealing from Steph, actually, is I'd like to see red phones on all of the labour wards in all of the hospitals that are in my geographical patch, because putting in a pre-alert call can be really challenging for crews. And also knowing how to get help. I mean, we've already got midwives in our control room, which is great, but they're not always there 24/7. And quite often the night shift isn't covered. So I'd really like for the crews to know that they can ring a number, it's going to get immediately picked up, and they can either pre-alert or they can ask for some advice. So that's something I would like to be a win for 2024. We've already spoken of my preterm pathway. That was a historic win. And the other wins for me have probably been Cruz being able to speak to a senior colleague who's had more training on Channel 16 on the radio. And I really try and deliver that into training wherever I can. I don't want that poor newly qualified paramedic to go out and think they're on their own, because they're not. They're absolutely not on their own. You know, there's always a phone a friend, and I want them to know that option is available to them. So I'm going to keep going out and banging that drum.
That's powerful. That's absolutely powerful. And Camilla, to yourself.
Yeah, I think we're just in a really exciting spot right now, because we've got a great network across the country. We've got a lot of motivated people involved. And I think that we've got a real opportunity now to be seen as a system partner, to have a great interface with the other systems that are trying to improve healthcare for these women and families. And I think that, yeah, this year we're going to go from strength to strength. And, you know, I just feel so lucky to work alongside these guys, Steph and Dawn. We, you know, we talk pretty much every day. And we're really lucky that we all bring something to the party, I think. They're more than me. That across the country, we're really trying to help each other do the right thing, and that for the staff as well as the women and families, because we always start from a place of sympathy when we think about pre-hospital clinicians attending maternity and newborn cases. And with that in mind, we're just really excited about the future and what we can do as a really strong network.
And that's a fantastic place to end. I think just as we do finish off, Steph, if you could just maybe speak to some resources which we'll indeed put in the show notes just for clinicians to do further reading.
Yeah, there's quite a number of publications that as a collective we've published over the last couple of years. So I'm more than happy to share them, just given the context of kind of pre-hospital displaced risk. Things such as kind of, you know, the role of the ambulance service in the transport of neonates. So we've got a few publications we could share with the audience. There's lots of training resources online. We developed a whole package of e-learning in NWAS that we share freely with anybody, just with a caveat that actually some of it kind of relates to processes within the Northwest Ambulance Service, but it all kind of aligns to the updates in JRCalc. There's a CPD Me platforms. I know the College of Paramedics do quite a few training and education resources. And then kind of what Dawn alluded to about the upcoming RCUK NLS course that pre-hospital clinicians will be able to book onto in future, but more than happy to share any kind of links that you can kind of add onto the podcast that you know, that kind of listeners might find useful. I'm sure we can gather some resources. Absolutely.
That would be fantastic, actually. And Dawn's just messaged to say there is some HCP, so some healthcare professional section on the website of SANS. We'll link into that as well, actually, because that sounds fantastic. And I'll put the links in from yourself, Steph, that clinicians can go away and read. I just want to extend my thanks to you over the last hour, well, indeed, like hour and a half almost. It's been absolutely fascinating just to get your insights. And indeed get the perspectives from what the future holds, but indeed where we've come from, because we've really, really have gained ground over the past few years. So it's fantastic just to hear from all three of you. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You're listening to the Pre-Hospital Care Podcast on the Medics Academy Network.